Hey, tea lovers. This is your host, Dee, and you're listening to the Tea with Dee podcast, the show that teaches you how to recover, regain, and relive. Diving into inner child healing, self-love, codependency, and trauma, the podcast for people who are looking to find their true, authentic self. Join me on the journey to live our best lives. Now let's get to the episode. Welcome back, tea lovers, to another episode of Tea with Dee. I'm thrilled to introduce my special guest, Julie McGew. She's an accomplished author, memoirist, essayist, and columnist who passionately explores themes of identity, family, and belonging. Her insightful writing delves into the profound questions of who we are and where we come from, helping readers make sense of their own personal journeys. Julie's journey into memoir writing was profoundly influenced by a significant event at age 48, when a breast biopsy revealed how much she didn't know about her own origin due to closed adoption. This revelation led to a five-year search for her personal story, where she beautifully chronicles in her award-winning memoir, Twice a Daughter, a search for family, identity, and belonging. The prequel to this memoir is eagerly anticipated and is set to be released in February 2025. Her latest book, Belonging Matters, Conversations on Adoption, Family, and Kinship, is a heartfelt compilation of her favorite blog posts, essays, and columns. It serves as a companion piece to her first memoir, aiming to support the adoption community and spark meaningful conversations. Beyond her writing, Julie is a devoted mother, grandmother, and identical twin. Her life's diverse roles and experiences add rich layers to her storytelling. She's been documenting her thoughts and stories for as long as she can remember, filling journals and binders with her reflections. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Julie McGew and finding her insights as inspiring and thought-provoking as I do. Stay tuned and prepare to be moved by her incredible journey and the wisdom she shares.
Welcome, Julie.
Hi, Diane. Great to see you again.
Good to see you as well. So today we're just going to dive right in. We're going to start with our first kind of realm of questions. It'll be the personal journey and writing questions. So can you share what initially sparked your passion for writing memoirs and essays, especially those focused on identity and belonging?
Okay, so when I knew I was going to write a book, the advice I was getting from my writing coaches was, you need a platform, meaning a website and social media handles. So this was way back in like 2014. And their suggestion was to start writing essays and blogs. So that's what I started to do, and posting them every week, every other week. I actually was writing two blogs at the same time. I was writing a blog called Touched by Adoption. And so everything was related to adoption topics. And those still live on my website. I don't write that particular blog anymore. I write That Girl, This Life. So that I can talk about lots of things, you know, besides adoption. I can talk about family and, you know, reading journey and everything like that. So that's how I got started. And then once the book came out in 2021, 3 years ago, can you believe it? Like,
I can't believe it. 3 years ago. So it came out in 2021, but when did you begin writing it?
I started like rough sketching things out right when it was happening. So I was really journaling, I would say. Not really writing for anybody but me to read at that time. And then when I started taking writing classes about how to actually craft chapters of a book, then I went back to all those journals and kind of put life to them. They're pretty boring.
I mean, I've journaled since I was probably 21 years old. I'm 27 now. And I look back at some of my journals and I'm like, what is my life like? This is just crazy. And especially to be able to put it in a, like a book and look back at it. I'm sure that is so rewarding for you.
It is. There's in my second book that came out last November, Belonging Matters, I have a piece about journaling. And I kind of crack up at myself like you, like looked at those teenage journals and I had one of those pens that had like multicolors, you know,
and
you
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
Button down. And so like my journals were like, some were in green, some were in red. So it was pretty funny. I don't know.
That.
We
I feel
entertain.
like I would do that based on my mood. Like if I was sad, I would be writing in blue, or if I was mad, I'd be writing in red.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look at that. I bet the red was when I was really mad at my mom or my sister or something.
Okay. I feel like that would probably be the same thing for me too, actually, if I look back.
Wealth of material, to be able to go back to those teenage journals and then the ones that I wrote during the search process to kind of say, oh yeah, like this definitely should go in the book, and this definitely is not going in the book.
Yeah, and I'm sure that was hard too, having to kind of dissect what was willing to go to the next phase of, the writing process and what needed to stay back based on maybe thinking of other people's intentions or not intentions, just looking out for other people, or maybe there's things you didn't want to share. And so I'm sure that was a journey in itself, having to decide like, what do I feel comfortable sharing with the world?
Yes, and most of the memoir teachers do tell you, write like nobody's going to read it but you. Don't hold back. Use real names. You can always go back and take out. And I did. I ended up going back and changing a few people's names, out some scenes that people just were too uncomfortable to have me leave. So
You
I think.
and I'm curious, do you ask those people too? Like, is it okay if I can put you in my book, or do you just say, this is my experience, this is my story, I'm gonna share it regardless, but maybe I can switch some names around?
I did both. So when it came to my twin sister and I writing about what we were doing, I didn't really ask her permission. That twin relationship that we have is built on trust, so I had a pretty good idea what she would be okay with and what not. But the things that were related to my birth mom and twice a daughter, I sent to her and said, "This is what I'm writing. Are you okay with this?" And I had changed her name. I changed identifying information about her, and she was fine about it. I think I made her comfortable enough that she didn't feel like her privacy was threatened. When it writing about my adoptive mom, though, I talked with my editor. There was a couple chapters in the middle of the book about my adoptive mom, and I was uncomfortable. And she said, "It's really integral to the story. I really think you should leave it. I know you're worried about it." And so I did leave those because they're really part of the character arc and our relationship, how it changed, was under pressure and conflict, and then resolved at the end. I explained all that to my mom, and then gave her the book. And I'm so proud of her reaction because I really was nervous. And she said, "You're a good writer, and I think you wrote the book that you needed to write."
How
So,
reassuring and like amazing that must have been.
a lot of forgiveness and healing in that. So when the book came out, I was proud of it, and I felt comfortable. One of the things that people don't realize when they're writing about other people is you have to get ask their permission if you want to use the real name. And so, like when somebody's deceased, you can write whatever you want about them because they can't give you permission or not. But I was mindful of the fact my birth father is deceased by the end that of Twice a Daughter. But because I'm still in relationship with my half brother and sister, I was respectful of them, changed their names, and subsequently changed his name too. So even though his permission, I had to honor those relationships.
Well, that's so funny you said that. So our last conversation was months ago, and it actually really sparked this kind of passion in me to want to start my own memoir and write my own book. And so because I lost my dad to cancer in 2019, and that shaped my entire world. And I think that that caused me to get in and out of unhealthy relationships because of like trauma bond or attachments and all these different things. And so kind of a little bit of trying to find my identities, which I think that you can relate to, and just trying to figure out like why am I here? What's my purpose? Why am I attracting these type of people? Why am I, maybe grieving this specific type of way? And so I appreciate your vulnerability and our last conversation in the books, because I feel like a small part of that inspired me to start my first chapter. And so
Okay.
just kind of figure out, like, I don't know if I'll ever help, like, if I'll ever do anything with it, but it was such a therapeutic healing process to go from the beginning of like my journey to kind of where I am now. And so I just think that that's, you know, such an amazing thing that you're doing, that just by the fact of your vulnerability, without you knowing, you're inspiring other people, which is so amazing.
Oh my gosh. Well, I have to say that I didn't realize when I was writing all this how changed it would make me feel. And I'm sure you feel for having just written one chapter. It's like, oh, where did that come from when something the page, and then you're like, I didn't know I thought that. But our subconscious is working on so many things, absorbing what's going on in our life and our emotions. And it's like another person inside there.
It is.
I'm so healed from writing.
I love
Every
that.
I'm so healed from what comes out and what I mean, I learn what I think about something just by, writing in a gratitude journal or just writing notes to talk to you today. I was like, wow, yeah, I should talk to her about that. That's
I love that.
The listeners are feeling inspired just to start scribbling a few things and
They
write it
are.
out.
I think this conversation, well, I started my podcast. So my podcast would be equivalent to your version of you writing. And so it's kind of like therapeutic, just, you know, word of mouth and like all this whole thing. But to kind of, you know, bring it back, I was curious about how your personal experience with closed adoption actually influenced your writing and your understanding of identity.
So, I didn't really think about my adoption very much, other than I knew I couldn't access personal information about my birth family or why they placed my sister and I for adoption. So I kind of like shelved it until I had this breast biopsy. And then my husband was the one that like really insisted I start figuring out if I could get information. And that was when like the light bulb went on. Like, you have to really think about how you feel about being adopted. How do you feel about being a twin? How did those two things influence your identity? And I did through writing those blogs and essays about being adopted and being a twin. And I'm so grateful that my twin sister and I were adopted together because I cannot even imagine going through life without her or finding out a twin and that we were separated. It is such a part of my personality. And so I think about identity almost every day, especially when I'm with my sister.
How could you not? I mean, you see her and you're like, oh, wait, this is sparking something in me.
Exactly.
So at 48, you were sent for a breast biopsy, which led to you to discover crucial information about your birth circumstances. Can you describe how this moment felt? Because we kind of were touching on it right now, but can you describe how that moment felt and its impact on your search for identity?
It was a fear-filled moment. I was kind of in a panic that I was under the gun now with this maybe troublesome threat of breast cancer. I had some other female history stuff, health stuff going on. I was kind of in a panic, like, how do I do this? You know, like if somebody is going to run a triathlon, you got to figure out how to do all those steps. And I was like that. I was like running a race, trying to figure out how do I find these people. I didn't know anybody that had done it. I knew one adopted person growing up, besides my siblings, because I have a brother that's adopted too, and one person in college. And, the rules were changing in 2011 when I started on this path, and the state of Illinois changed their access to original birth records, which meant I could access my original birth record. It didn't actually help me in the long run because my birth mom used an alias and my birth father's name wasn't on there. But it started that whole process of, okay, I can figure this out. I have the tools out there. The circumstances are such that I am able to access certain information. And then having my sister there with
Yeah.
me help figure it out and kind of problem solve it. She was in it with me. She was a she had stake in it. So we
Yeah.
figured it.
I love that. Figuring it out together, that's what I feel like is the best part of healing is like working through it with someone sometimes. It's good to work on it on your own, but how nice is it that you and your sister were both able to figure that out together?
Yes, and as I've shared with you before, I had a couple of awesome social workers
Yeah.
that helped me, two different ones that really helped me on that whole journey of figuring out how do I think about this.
That's amazing. So your search for your personal story took around 5 years. What were some of the most challenging and rewarding moments during this journey?
The most challenging one was when my birth mother received her outreach letter from my intermediary, and she said, "No, I don't want anything to do with these girls." She thought of us as girls instead of women, which is an interesting thing. We were sort of stuck in time, I think, with her. So that was really, really rough. That rejection, it was, I mean, adoption is the first rejection, then this outreach was the secondary rejection. So it was tough, and that was when I reached out to a social worker who understood the whole adoption situation for help, and I got put into a support group with my peers, which was excellent.
Yeah, that's so hard. You should, I hope you give yourself credit and like grace for how far you've come in that, like as such a child, like being a child that being placed in adoption and feeling that rejection in a sense, because you don't know the reason why until later on, which you do discover later on the reasoning why. But your whole life, you have no idea why your parents decided to, put you up for adoption. And so then you make it about yourself. Could it be me? What was wrong? What were all these things? And then feeling the second rejection of, well, now you're adults wanting to know more, and it's still like, I don't want any communication. So that
You know,
must have been hard.
it was hard. And until she changed her mind and decided to incorporate us in her life, I had like 9 months of work to do to kind of put myself back in a good place. Fortunately, I had strong relationships with my husband and my kids and my sister. And she did change her mind. And I think that time period where we were figuring out next steps was good for both of us. We both had to sit back and say, you know, what am I willing to do? What are my boundaries? What am I able to tolerate? And can I trust again? And
Right.
trust is a big thing in entering into a relationship with her.
100%. So in Twice a Daughter, you chronicle your search for family and belonging. What was the most surprising revelation you uncovered during this journey?
Well, there are many, but I think the day, and I have a whole chapter about this in Twice a Daughter, the day that we really figured out who my birth father was, his real name, and who he was, and I got the facts from the genealogist with my birth father's picture, and it came out of the fax machine, and it was such a clone of my son. I mean, I think my heart stopped. I cried. I looked at the picture. I knew he was the right guy. And at the time, so my birth father played college football. This was the picture that came out of the fax machine. And my son was playing college football at the same time.
Wow, what
Like
a
such an
butterfly effect. That's
yeah.
wow. How that would have been that for me, I would have been like, I would have needed a couple days to process that. Because that's so, I mean, you then you're kind of like, this makes sense, but what is it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense.
Exactly.
That's wild. So your newly released book, Belonging Matters, compiles essays and blog posts on adoption, family, and kinship. What message or themes do you hope readers take away from this collection?
You know, belonging is the most important theme. Certainly, I talk about my adoption search and some of the things that happened after Twice a Daughter came out. But I think belonging, is integral to everybody's, formation of self. You know, it's, Are we in at the right lunch table as middle schoolers? Are we in the right sport or in the right hobby as adults? And even now, I lost my husband a couple years ago, and so I'm still figuring out, where do I belong? Who am I without this wonderful person that I've spent 37 years married to? So I think belonging just is a lifelong process. And if we give ourselves the grace to say we don't ever achieve full belonging because we're always changing and people are always changing and our interests change. So I offer that to the people in your audience, but also that want to pick up Belonging Matters. That theme is threaded through every essay.
I love that. So, how do you believe the concepts of identity and belonging have evolved in your life and writing over the years?
Before I was just an adoptee and a twin, and now I'm not just a wife or a mother and a grandmother. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
And I guess I probably always wanted to be one, but this whole topic, landing in my lap and launching, all of this work that I love doing isn't a remarkable thing to happen later in life.
Yeah, I love that. So, what role do you think storytelling plays in helping others understand and navigate their own journeys of identity and belonging? It seems as though, as we're talking here, that writing has really been therapeutic for you. So, what roles do you feel like storytelling helps others understand and navigate those journeys?
I think people generally are voyeuristic. They like to read stories or listen to stories and identify with the character or their emotions. And then they draw their own meaning from those stories to see how it affects their life. I'm always telling a story to my grandsons, and they always have a different reaction to it. And I think that that's what happens with books and podcasts and, music. I mean, musicians are storytellers too. So I think we're always looking for meaning in a story to see how it relates to us in our lives.
I completely agree. As an identical twin, mother, a grandmother, and writer, how have your personal family relationships influenced your perspective on adoption and kinship?
Such a great question. So now I have a half brother and sister that I didn't know I had. My relationships with them are really strong and full, and we appreciate each other in our lives. I also appreciate having my kids in my life because I'm watching myself in them, but also I'm looking at family history playing out. Pictures that my birth mother and my birth father passed on to me, I'm seeing some of my relatives in them. And it's really a fulfilling thing to see life go full circle.
That's beautiful. How do you see the adoption community evolving, and what support do you believe is most crucial for those touched by adoption?
One of the greatest things that's happened with the internet and Zoom, is the ability to connect with people on a personal level, even if we're not in the same place. There are so many great adoption foster care networks, to access on Facebook, and beyond. So I love that that's happening in the adoption community. As I mentioned earlier, I only knew one person growing up that was adopted. And now young adoptees can get involved in these groups, find help or hope, healing, find friendships that will help influence their identity going forward. So I think we're in a wonderful space.
I love that. Can you walk us through your writing process? So, how do you balance personal reflection? Well, actually, we'll go first. Can you walk us through your writing process? What does that kind of look like for you?
Oh my gosh, I love to take a really good walk, think about ideas that are percolating in my head about a blog post or an essay, kind of work them out mentally first. And then I go right to the computer, I put in a rough draft, And then I let it sit for a while, and because I really find that giving some distance to my thoughts, like 2 or 3 days, and then go back and edit again, maybe the next day. So it could take me a whole week to really get something polished up, and make the point that I want to make.
I love that. Yeah, I noticed that about myself too, is before I learned in life to not give so quick of reactions. I think because sometimes it takes us a while to process things and understand what exactly we're trying to convey or understand or process. And so I agree, a walk is very therapeutic for me. And also to giving it a day or two to really process, maybe there's another additional thought that can come into play here, or maybe I want to take something out, or just kind of like brainstorming. Sorry, my dog is barking right now. So let's see. So how do you balance personal reflection with the broader themes you wish to explore in your work?
One of the things I learned through my memoir classes is it was really important to put the reader in a scene, so they could ground themselves in some kind of geographical setting and then work in little moments of reflection and then kind of summarize up at the end what meaning I took from the scene that I gave them. That recipe that was given to me by writing coaches has really worked for me personally.
I like that. So, who or what are some of your biggest influences and inspirations in your writing career?
Oh my gosh, I love Ann Patchett. Everything she does is fabulous. I just listened to a webinar yesterday through the National Association of Memoir Writers between Linda Joy Myers and Amy Farris. I love their conversation about how to put things on the page and how to be original. They talked about voice, so readers could tap into them. Another favorite writer, of course, is Cheryl Strayed. She's the one that wrote Wild. She did some writing seminars at Kripalu, the yoga center, and everything that she talked about, that we have these stories within us, and that it's our duty to get them out and to put them on page, because there's something that our body does by carrying these stories. They fester in us, sort of like a splinter was her example, that once you get that out, you feel so much better. And so she's a wonderful guiding tool for me, Cheryl Strayed.
I like that. So the prequel to Twice a Daughter is set to release in February 2025. Can you give us a sneak peek into what this book will cover and what readers can expect?
So many readers of Twice a Daughter said, "We want to know what it was like to grow up as a twin and an adoptee in your big family, some of who you talk about in Twice a Daughter." So I went back and start from kind of the beginning of time with my sister and I when we were adopted, all the way through the birth of my first child. It was harder to write this book than it was the first one. Not just because it was. Most of it was, far in history, but there were some moments that I had not ever written about and I don't talk about very often. And so pulling those out, getting my emotions straight about them. The book also ends with, as I said, with the birth of my daughter. So I had to start writing about my husband and our relationship and our romance. And 2 years into the loss, so it triggered a bunch of things. And I found out I had to work slower than I was used to working. I had to give myself time to kind of, rest after writing a powerful, scene or whatever. And so I'm really proud of the way the book turned out. It made me happy to write it. Think it's a bit of a reckoning for my family too. There's some scenes in there during our childhood that have to do with family building. I don't know. I think it might be my best book yet. We'll see.
Oh, wait, I love this for you. This is amazing. So, everyone listening, you know what to do in February 2025. So, what are some of your future goals as a writer and advocate for the adoption community?
Well, I'm going to continue to do podcasts and book talks. I'm involved in the adoption community only as a writer. There's so many better people to advocate for change in adoption law, like Open Records Acts. There's wonderful organizations that are working on that. So I don't feel like I need to be in that space, but I feel like writing about an adoptee from closed adoption, but also aging and how that affects family. I feel like that's where my talents lie. So I'm going to continue to write essays and blog posts onto that topic.
I love that. So we're kind of wrapping up with the questions here. And one question that I was really excited to ask you is, what advice would you give to someone who's starting their journey in memoir writing, particularly those writing about personal and sensitive topics?
Well, we talked about this in the beginning, so it's nice to come back to it. Start with just writing down your thoughts and into a journal, and then sign up for a class. I highly recommend the National Association of Memoir Writers. That would be a great place to start. They have all sorts of educational classes to take, and I benefited from a lot of things that they provided. And then get in a writing community. Still in a writing community where the four of us ch exchange work every 2 weeks, and critiquing and accepting critique from others is really an important part of being a writer. You got to get a thick skin. And those of us that are vulnerable, putting our vulnerability out there is tough
Yeah.
to do. But that is one of the tools that you have to be part of is being in a writing group.
I love that. And last and final question, outside of writing, what are some of your favorite activities or hobbies that bring you joy and inspiration?
Well, I've been playing tennis since I was in high school. So I'm a part of a couple different tennis teams, which I love that competition. I play golf and I go on a lot of walks, a lot of nature walks. I'm going to hike the El Camino Trail with some ladies
Wow.
next September. So
Yeah.
it's going to be a writing, hiking, spiritual journey for 14 of us with a writing coach. It should be amazing.
That's amazing. And so I was going to ask you more questions in regards to your story and how you met your birth mother and how that whole process went down, but I felt like I kind of wanted the listeners to really read the book to kind of understand and what goes in depth. But for those who are kind of like, maybe can we get a sneak peek or what exactly happened? Can you briefly share with us exactly, how you came to find out why you were adopted?
My birth mom was not a teenager. She was an adult. She was working in a school. She was a teacher, and she had a relationship with a coworker in the school, and they had different religions, and he did not want to convert to Catholicism, and they couldn't figure out how to work through that. So this was all back in 1958. She was the oldest of a big family and knew that if she went to her family and said, I'm pregnant, they would disown her. So her story is so typical of any birth mother back in what we call the baby scoop era, when there were a lot of babies available for adoption because abortion was not available safely. And adoption was the only choice. So many of those ladies took aliases or were sent away. There was a lot of shame involved in becoming an unwed mother back in those days. I think there still is some, but I think society is more open to single women raising children than they were back then. My understanding of her and what she went through gives me a lot of empathy. Two women. I think of everybody in the adoption triangle, adoptive parents, adoptees, and birth parents. I feel for the birth mothers because they really, to give a child up for adoption means you are in desperate circumstances for whatever reason. And making that choice, the choice that benefits the child, is a really gut-wrenching choice for a parent to make. So that has been a long time in coming to those realizations and empathy. And I think if we offer courtesy to people that are in difficult positions that we don't personally walk side by side with them, I think that's a wonderful healing tool.
I agree. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for taking the time to answer all my questions today. I hope that all the listeners, they tune in, they are ready to listen to the second prequel, the prequel to Twice a Daughter. And is there any additional, comments or things that you would like to say?
I think the best thing that I could say to the listeners is, just try to be a better listener to people when they're telling you a story, not jump in right away with judgments and advice. Just sit back and listen a little longer than you might usually listen.
Yeah, I always, my therapist tells me one of the best pieces of advice that I will ever receive is ask someone when someone's confiding in you, do you want me to listen or are you looking for advice?
Ah, I
And
love that.
nine times out of 10, they're just wanting you to listen. And it creates, breaks down a lot of walls, and it's an amazing thing. So hopefully the listeners here can take whatever we were talking about today back with them and integrate it in their lives. They're inspired in some way. And yet again, Julie, it is an honor and a pleasure to speak with you today and interview you for a second time. And just thank you so much.
Thanks, Diane. Really fun to
Thank
be with you
you.
today.
I know, let me end the